Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, let's go. We have no time to waste. That's what this platform is about. You're listening to the number one, and I mean number one, industrial-related podcast in the universe. That's my story. That's what I'm sticking to. And it is dedicated to you, the industrial professionals, the companies that get it done. You're bold, you're brave, you dare greatly, you innovate, you're changing the world. We celebrate you each and every day on this platform. Thank you. Thank you for what you do. This is all about you. And we are providing the content in a way that makes you a success because, quite frankly, you need to be a success, especially now. Let's get going. We have no time to waste. Not gonna sit here and lollygag. No lollygag, and it's all about action. We are all about action on the Industrial Talk Podcast, and we highlight individuals that are all about action. Now, this podcast is gonna be unique. And the reason it's unique, it's a superhero sales roundtable, free-for-all, hot seat type of environment. And the reason for that is that, okay, we need solutions. You can't just sit there and say it's business as usual. We need innovative solutions, not just from a technology point of view, but how are we doing? How are we doing our sales? How are we doing our marketing? And for me, it has been just an absolute tremendous honor to be able to sort of wrangle these very generous LinkedIn influencers on this particular podcast. So I'm going to be rattling off some names now. You know, you can go out to industrialtalk.com and you can find these names. And then when you go out there and you go onto their stat card on LinkedIn, you'll say, holy cow, they're influencers. And you'll be amazed at their desire to help you and help anybody to bring in more revenue, think sales in a different way. They're just spectacular. They give of themselves. They're wonderful people with big hearts, okay? Just take that for what it's worth. I'm telling you right now, that is the case because when I approached them, I just said, hey, I've got this idea, and they said yes. So the first one on the list is Marcus Chan. You might have heard him on some other podcasts, as well as Alex Elaine. Both of them have been on it, and they've been sharing just sales truth bombs over and over again because we got to think about how we're going to generate revenue going forward. What innovative solutions exist out there that we could deploy today as fast as we possibly can and leverage the wisdom that we have here. Anita Canev, that's C-A-N-E-V, Danny Heinsohn. Go look at all these. I'm just telling you right now, you look at these doggone stat cards, they're fantastic. Jerome Balzer, incredible representative from our wonderful country of Netherlands. Ken Baldo, he is the king of WordMash, as you'll see on this particular podcast. He just has those words just rolling off of his tongue. He's absolutely amazing. And then Daniel Burke, I hope I say the last name because it's hyphenated, Aguayo. So if it's not, but you got to find him out there, it will be out on the Industrial Talk Podcast. And you know what we're talking about? We're talking about sales and marketing, and we're talking about strategies associated with that. Remember, you have a business. And what we're focused on here, and what I think is the biggest focus, is five components of a business. You've got sales and marketing that you've got to get up and running yesterday and now. That's one. Two, you've got to have your finances in order. We're going to be highlighting professionals within that organization too as well. You've got the three, human capital, your talent, your individuals. How do you bring them back on? We're going to have just a tremendous cavalcade of professionals that are talking specifically about human capital, talent, acquisitions, retention, all of the components that you need specifically today. We're going to talk about your operations, and we've been doing a lot of conversations around reliability, uptime, digital twin, things that are really important to making that asset, that operations run efficiently. And then finally, technology that you can leverage today. And we're going to have leaders in those fields. We've been talking, we've got a couple of interviews coming up that is specific to blockchain, Not just any blockchain, not the Bitcoin blockchain. No, this is specific to permission-based blockchains, supply chain, transportation, and how to leverage technology. And we just have leaders all over the place. That's what this platform is about. So let's get going with the sales superheroes. It's like I said, it's going to be a lengthy podcast. So pause it if you got to go do something. Come back to it. But I'm telling you right now, this is going to be just an absolute, I don't know, it's a win for you. It's a win for industry. It's a win for all of us to be able to have all of these individuals on this. So enjoy the superheroes of sales, because I really don't have, I mean, they're superheroes to me. So enjoy. All right. Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Thank you very much for joining. We have an incredible all-star superhero sales event roundtable. It's just going to be sort of a brouhaha of sales insights because, well, we can always do a better job at selling and marketing and gaining that attention that we need to be able to bring in revenue. And these folks, as well as some that will be popping up, are going to be, rock stars too. So anyway, welcome, guys. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. Happy to be here.
And I expect you guys to sort of heat it up a little bit. So one of the challenges that we're dealing with, especially with industry, is the fact that, okay, all these companies, I don't care where it is, they've consolidated and consolidated and consolidated, and now they're down to really bare bones just to try to keep the lights on, try to keep some semblance of a business rolling. But in that activity, in that effort, they've chewed up a lot of their sales, their operations, every portion of their business just to keep it on. And so what I'd like to be able to talk about, and not only that, their relationships have done the same thing. Their supply chain has done the same thing. Everybody has, they're just down to the bare bones. The question I have, the challenge that I think that we need to try to figure out, one, how do we begin to generate revenue in that particular and unfortunate reality of a COVID post, whatever world we're living in, and begin to generate revenue from a sales and marketing perspective? And many don't even know what to do, or like me, that's why you guys have been so gracious to come on this particular podcast. I would be interested in saying, okay, I'm a business, I've consolidated down. What would you do as the owner that has done that, from your perspective, just open it up, what would you do first? It's open now, all of a sudden.
The first thing I think is really important, Scott, is I think number one, it has to be a shift in mindset, okay? I mean, when you think about any business, you need two things. You need sales and you need profit. It's as simple as you can get, right? Yeah. And when you go into a cost-cut mode, which I totally understand where it's absolutely relevant and you are focusing on profit, but from a sales perspective, you are also hurting your future growth, right? And if you already made those cuts, it is what it is. Reality is the majority of businesses have already made a lot of those cuts, right? And it's normal to fall into that scarcity mode, right? But one thing that I would do immediately, right, if you have not already done so, is I'll be reaching out to all your existing clientele and your customers to check in with them, right? And there's twofold reasons, right? Number one, you're going in there to make sure that you have a good relationship with them, make sure they're totally good, because they're looking to cut costs, they might be cutting you too, right? So you wanna make sure you have a really good standing with them. And then number two, you look for opportunities to also work with them potentially to grow more within that account or get referrals, right? And that's something you can do right now that costs you $0 that will help with getting some meet quick wins for the business.
Yeah, and you're also showing yourself that hey, I'm hurting, and I might as well, in my effort to try to collaborate more, I'm going to just reach out to my customers and figure out some solutions associated that maybe I can help out and get them going. Because if they get going, maybe I get going. Does that make sense? Anybody else want to chime
in? I'd love to jump in on this one as well, guys. Great point there, Marcus. I think if I was the CEO, something that I'd spend a lot of time on right now is to assess all of the data that I have to really understand the lay of the land. And the reason I say that is that when we think about our sales execution, we need to understand what piece of the funnel is broken, which piece actually needs optimizing in the first place. And the reason I say that is whenever I do work with founders and CEOs, quite a lot of the time, you know, some of them are actually getting a great funnel of leads coming in. But what they're not great at is converting that demand and those leads into closed revenue. There's others who aren't getting leads in at the top of the funnel in the first place. So when it comes to doubling down in your sales execution, we need to look at, let's assess the data to really understand what piece of our funnel could do with the most optimization. Do we need to double down on our negotiation and closing techniques? Do we need, actually need more leads in the funnel at the first place? And then make active investments where the funnel is broken so that all of a sudden you can connect the dots.
Let me interrupt real quick. Define a funnel. If you don't know what a funnel is, define that please for us.
For sure. So when we use the term sales funnel in many different ways, you're talking about almost bringing a customer into your world and into your company's process. So when you think about a funnel, the beginning will be your initial engagement with them. A next stage might be going through a technical validation or a qualification process, something like that. And then the next stage into a negotiation and a closing cycle. So you'll have your own internal process, which you'll refer to as your sales cycle. And you need to understand which piece of that is quote unquote broken so that you can then double down and invest more time there. Does that make a bit more sense?
Yeah, but what's interesting is that a funnel that is dependent on something more digitally, like a digital platform, or is that sort of like the traditional sales cycle type of approach, or is it both? There's Anita. Hey, Anita.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Anita.
Pulling up the women representation. Thank you.
It's a great question, Scott. And ultimately, what we see is that companies will leverage digital to have platforms and effective means by which to manage and track a sales cycle now. So it's not a digital thing innately, but you would use a platform such as a CRM tool or a CRM platform so that you can track the various different stages. And by using that platform, it's much easier and quicker for you to identify which piece is broken, because using that platform, you can say, hey, we only got 10 leads in last month, or actually we got 20 leads in, but only 3 deals. And that's telling us that actually we're getting great initial interest, but we're not doing a great job at converting that interest into revenue.
So I'm gonna go one step up, and anybody can chime in on this one. When you start talking about technology, you start talking about a CRM, I would imagine from a pre-virus perspective, a lot of pencil whipping was going on, a lot of not good data, and I've seen it. Is there a necessity to take that technology and do an assessment of saying, okay, we got to do this based off of what Alex was saying. We got to do this and we got to do it right. And let's start being disciplined about it, cleaning up the data, because I guarantee you there's crappy data in there. There is. And then begin to leverage that data going forward, that insight, and be able to create some discipline in putting the information in there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%, Scott. And just to elaborate more about that, right? When you take a step back, pull aside even just sales, right? I mean, if you think about it from a civilization perspective, there are only thousands of cultures that are gone now because they weren't properly documented, okay? And when you think about it from this perspective, what they had was tribal knowledge. It was through word of mouth, right? But as over time, civilizations die away because they're only by word of mouth, it's not documented. When you look at a sales process, it's the same concept. If it's only word of mouth, if it's only tribal knowledge of the accounts you're working on, there's nothing in a system that's documented, the life cycle of that data falls apart pretty quickly. That culture for that company eventually could die out if they cut their sales team in half or more, because now that tribal knowledge is gone with those reps. So you need a system that's going to hold the data, that tribal knowledge.
Anybody else want to expand upon that?
Yeah, hop in on that.
Daniel, go on.
Fair enough. So I think just to keep it simple, and Daniel, I'll pass it over to you and Ken in a second, because when I was thinking of your question, Scott, the first thing that came to mind was just, if we don't know where we are, how are we going to figure out how to get to where we need to go? And so, Alex, your point about figuring out which part of the funnel is spot on. But the second part of, in order to figure that out, sometimes we do have to do some digging. We have to do some heavy lifting. We have to go back through the books that are in paper to convert them, to figure out our ratios. And whether it's business, or I know Danny and Ken are both big runners, It's the same thing. We have to figure out what's working in order to figure out to where we're going to focus on to grow. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good point. I think the art versus the science of selling comes into play, right? The art's useless, could be very useless right now.
Yeah.
If you don't have the proper data and metrics to delve into that. And so many companies and so many salespeople, especially field reps, hem and haw about inputting data because it's cumbersome and it's not easy. I'm in the field, I'm in the hospital, and they want something quick and easy. But even so, I think right now, what I see is that you got managers scrambling to unscramble the data that doesn't exist. Good luck on scrambling data that doesn't exist. And I think that, to Marcus' point earlier about mindset, I don't want to go back too far, but when you are making your calls to your clients and you're looking for opportunity, is to inquire, don't require, and help them understand where their gaps are. Help them solve.
Yes.
But if their data is inaccurate or not updated or there is none, it's just a vicious cycle. We're all working in a world now where I don't know how to coach you as a manager because the data is wrong, and I don't know where to start in the damn pipeline because it's not accurate.
It's interesting because, and Danny, we'll get to you, and I want you to talk about it, but it's interesting that sort of there was this, for lack of a better term, a sense of laziness this pre-virus, and so they got away with it. They just sort of got away with it. And now you're in this firefight to try to get the data, but it's like that's what you need to do right now to figure out where you are, and that's the only source. Danny, you got a response?
Yeah, Dan, thanks for the quick plug there. Want to go back to, I'm assuming that the majority of the people on this call have been through the housing crisis recession and lived through all that. And with the company I was working for, a lot of our competitors end up going out of business. They just didn't have the infrastructure to adapt and move forward. But, 2010 came along and we had record-breaking sales year. But during 2009, we had a dip in sales. And, a lot of our clientele was largely from this corporate sponsorship activation space. So, when we get hit with some sort of recession type of event, some of the first dollars that are to fall off the radar are those corporate sponsorship dollars. So, even though, we still maintain those relationships and we did have other people kind of falling off the grid, keeping that human to human connection with our prospects and our clients and just being real. And I think Marcus, like you said earlier, just staying in contact to say, how you doing, man? How you doing in the situation? Just being present with them. Just keeping on building that social capital, the human capital with these people is how you play the long game and how you succeed. And just like running a marathon, you get to the wall, that proverbial wall about mile 18, and your brain starts to redirect oxygen and nutrients to the other parts of your body, and you get to the point where it becomes mind over matter. But I think the same thing is sales. It's an endurance event, and you need to have the proper training, which Marcus really does really well through his LinkedIn posts, and we've had a really good conversation a couple weeks ago. Just like you have to train for sales, like you're training for a marathon, because you can run 5 miles in a couple of weeks, but then as you're building up your miles, you need to build up that conditioning in your head, in your sales system, in your infrastructure, if you want to cross that finish line. So even though we're at a point right now where we might have hit that proverbial wall, where are the opportunities to keep digging deeper into our, into our respective company cultures or into personally to add more value with our
target. I like the fact that you dropped the 18 mile bomb. I only do that in a car.
I prefer at mile 23, but you stick to 18.
A little running trash talk right there.
I've never run 18 miles in my life. I'm just saying, I'm not that kind of cardio. So
that's exactly right.
It's usually between 18 and 22 is when I hit the wall.
It's a glamour body. It looks good. It's not functional at all. You know,
it is. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that. You know, there's a lot of hardcore salespeople. They're like, you know, now's the best time to sell, and everyone's home, and they're, and that's true. That there's accessibility is absolutely there for you. So, you know, I like to think of you could still be hardcore, but go about it being at hardcore, like your heart. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't just leverage the pandemic and people are available come from it from the heart, and you can still be hardcore.
Look at that, man. You're meshing words together. You're quite the wordsmith, Ken.
He's a one-liner king.
He is. Just popping these one-liners. Like,
don't be hardcore, be hardcore in selling. Oh,
we need that on a t-shirt. Let's get that.
Wow.
I promise you, I'm working on it.
Yeah. Hey, Nita, so because you joined a little late, we were just talking about, hey, I'm in business. Where do I start? I've just, in essence, just cut my business down to just barely keeping the lights on, right? Apollo 13 style, right? And we were just saying, what's the first thing? And then Marcus chimed in and said, let's reach out to customers. And then Alex said, hey, let's look at the data. And then we were talking about, well, what about bad data? What is your thoughts?
It's so funny. Somebody mentioned the 2008 financial crisis. You know, I've been in financial services for almost 20 years. So it was such a crazy time. We lost a whole section of our product, which all cut my income by a third, and lived through that. And so coming to this point, I think one thing that is to recognize, like we've done this. This is fine. Like this, we're going to come out on the other end. Good. So mentally preparing, you know, being at a point where don't let little things throw you off. And I'm saying little things, and I'm not trying to not be empathetic. I understand that we're doing a lot of shifting, but at the end, we've got to recognize that this is a period of time and we should expect it. I mean, the market corrects itself every 5 to 7 years. There's always something that'll throw this off. So mentally start there. Just say, no, you know, okay, I'm going to come out at the other side. So don't make panic management decisions. You know, stay the long-term course. I love the marathon example because it's a long-term game. You're not doing this to win the lottery in 5 minutes. You're doing this to build a massive career. So starting
Do you think
with
you
that.
Have to have a sort of resiliency in your mind? It's like, okay, we got hammered pretty hard. This has been a difficult time. So I'm going to look at all my business processes, my models, everything I touch, I'm going to look at it from the perspective of resiliency. Because like you said, you know, 5, 7, 8 years, whatever, we're going to have an event that is uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
For lack of a better term.
Absolutely. Scott, just a point on that is I think, you know, something that's really important now is just character, right? And whenever I've come to the point of hiring salespeople or being involved in those cycles, I always talk to three characteristics which I can't teach. And as a result, I almost put more weight on than anything else. And it's simply passion, desire, and hunger, passion, drive, and hunger. Because I can't teach anyone those three things. And I almost summarize that as character. I can teach you a sales process and how to execute that. But I can't do that bit. And we're now in a time where character is really more prevalent than anything else, because you need to be able to tap into that source of motivation to continue to fire forward. Process, systemization, investing in tools, anyone can do that, right? But those bits...
Not a question, man.
Go ahead, Jerome.
Sorry, Alex.
Go ahead.
I have another question for you guys. Because I've heard the data, which is always a great thing, the process, and also very good comment about the knowledge that's in the brains of people who are walking away or sitting at home right now. On the other side, I see that the exchange of ideas and bringing that in the right process has taken place, and it's easier than ever if you have a good guide who can do that, who knows what the fundamental process should be and was. Are you guys also seeing in the field now that some companies should throw away their customer profile and think about this from scratch again?
Well, I think it's a great question, right? I don't know if it's necessarily throwing it away, but what I have found for the companies that actually last through tough times like this, they are masters at refining everything, right? So it's taking, whether it's a process or an ICP, ideal customer profile, or target market, or whatever they're looking at, and they're just simply refining what they already have, right? They may remove some characteristics, add some characteristics, and make some adjustments to say, okay, you know what? These are the things that we want to maintain. This is what we need to adapt and adjust for the future, right? So for example, right, maybe in the past, they just took on any customer. That really hurt profitability. So now they're in a spot where they're bleeding. They're absolutely bleeding now, right? So, okay, well, how can we, what can we do by looking at our profile now of our target customers? Who is ideal, right? Because perhaps maybe they took on some customers that are just not profitable because they were too lenient, if you will, with who they wanted to bring on. So they can tweak their target market, who they're going after. And ultimately, they might bring on less customers down the road, but they may be more profitable customers, which will ultimately help them be successful and thrive during really great times. And during tough times, they can still survive and be fine.
Yeah, my experience from 2008 is that the companies that were able to refine, pivot, they also came out way ahead. They boosted. They're the ones that are going to catapult themselves when this is over, because I think they're great at, I think two things. One is they have their ideal target clients tight. They've niched their niche and re-niched it. So when you do that, everything becomes a lot freaking easier. You can pivot easier. You can, your messaging can be done easier. And more importantly, you don't have you have your A and B clients. That's who you want, the ideal A and B, and the C and D that most companies have. I call the C and D your cancers and destroyers. And if you're made up of cancers and destroyers in a time of a pandemic, you're probably not going to be one of the companies that are going to last.
Wow.
So I think, you know, it's a slap in the face for these companies to say, I better have my ideal target client or prospect so tight that when this happens again, and it will in whatever form,
right,
I can learn and pivot more freely.
Sounds like a great opportunity for other companies, because those customers who are walking away, they could fill your pipeline, right?
Danny, go ahead.
Sure. I've spent the past 4 years scaling the infrastructure for my nonprofit that I started back in 2010, and we were aiming to have our biggest impact year this year in scholarships awarded. And then when this whole pandemic came down, we lost, you know, roughly about $70,000 to $80,000 in revenue opportunities toward scholarships to these kids. So we had a pivot, and because we're a national organization, we started out local, where 20% of the funds stay, you know, in the state of Nevada, but the rest of the 80% of the scholarships we award are nationwide. So the way that we pivoted is, you know, we're leveraging technology. We in celebration of our 10-year, we're planning on putting on a virtual survivor summit with healthcare workers, the patients, their parents, and do a mini conference out of it. But the opportunity for us is, I'm going to start targeting pharmaceutical companies, to help us pony up some sponsorship dollars. So even though we can't make the revenue from our traditional model, being able to pivot, through a digital aspect and creating a live virtual conference out of this, and having the opportunity to actually, what's $1,000, $2,500, $5,000 sponsorship with maybe a large pharmaceutical company, that's a drop in the bucket. So, you know, even though we weren't able to have this in-person huge community event, we're transitioning to virtual, and we're finding a way to win on a different front.
A quick question. Do you think it's business as usual? Do you, let's say I'm a company and I'm thinking, okay, yeah, this too shall pass. Anita's right. It'll pass. We'll get on the other side. Is it a big red flag for me to think, okay, if I just sort of weather, and then get to the other side and just do business as usual, am I missing an opportunity?
Big time. I think a theme through everything that's just been said just now is being agile as an organization, both in the way that you think and the way that you operate as well. And so if you're not taking the lessons from all of this to understand how can we be an agile business, how can we operate as one, that means that irrespective of the times or the circumstances or the situations, we're able to pivot and we're able to, as you know, as an organization, even culturally, get people excited and keep them engaged throughout these challenging times, then you're most definitely missing the trick, right? There should be a lot of learning from this.
Yeah, Scott, I actually think this, the crazy part is that most people think that way, right? They're going to try to weather it out. So we actually get to take advantage of the fact that there is way less competition going right now. So if you don't, you know, move right now, you are going to lose out on a lot.
Okay, so you're absolutely, and I'm jumping in just because what we've defined is that, okay, get your data right, reach out to your customers, right? Interact with them from the point of heart. I can't mesh words like Ken. I'm sure there's a word meshing thing I can do, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to try it because I'm not an expert. And then reach out, continue those relationships, collaborate with them, see how you can help them survive and succeed, and be able to have that dialogue, right? And then hopefully you're going to gain, like you said, Ken, some market share. And you're going to come out on the other side better than you were, let's say, pre. And it's sort of a weird way, but you benefit from the whole thing. Does that sound right?
Yeah, because absolutely. I think people are going to come up with new ways to do business and attract their clientele. Yeah. You see it a lot in the food industry. At least I do, with the way they're delivering food, the way they're getting better at their online ordering systems have improved and need to improve. Take the pizzeria industry. Pizzeria industry. Typically their ordering online process, for lack of a better word, sucks. How many are still calling up over the phone to order pizza because they either don't have one or it's just cumbersome, sort of like some CRMs. Now the pizzerias that had these ordering systems doing well and working for them, they're ahead of the curve already. Because there's hundreds of pizza places. I'm going to go with the one that's easy to order online, that shows me when my food's going to be delivered, it tracks the driver, and when it's been dropped off versus sitting on the phone for 10 minutes listening to Mario, yell at his coworkers. I don't want to deal with Mario.
I hear you.
Sorry, Mario.
Yeah, right. Mario. You make a delicious pizza. It's not personal. So, Daniel, do you have some insights or comments on that one?
Yeah. So, as we've been going throughout this this arc of leaning into working with our ideal customers, right? Reaching out, having that open line of communication, leading from the heart. I think one thing that just kind of kept coming back to mind, I'm thinking of a couple clients that right when this whole thing first started, they talked about doubling down on the basics, right? Picking up the phone, being in front of people, communication. They talked about how because we're the ones who are going to double down, we will come out of this ahead of the game, right? Kind of like how everyone's talking about. This will, I forget the formal phrase of it, but this will weed out
people. Can you come up with the phrase for him?
So we'll weed some people out, right? But the thought that kind of kept coming back to mind was just this idea of that we all have champions in our ICPs. Like there are within our customers, our A's and B's, Ken, we have people who are actually champions who not only like us, but they love us. And so I guess the thought maybe is then are we asking for help? Are we letting people help us? Or are we trying to go about business as usual in the sense of I'm making the call, I'm having the conversation, I'm keeping that relationship, or can I go a step further and let them in to what's actually going on our end? Because they're an ideal customer, they're a champion, they want to help me succeed.
Yeah.
Am I asking for help?
ICP, you dropped that bomb. What is it?
Your ideal customer profile, Marcus.
Got it.
Alex,
ideal
talking about
customer profile, ICP.
Yeah.
Take a note out there, listeners. Okay. Ideal customer profile.
Yeah. I think, Daniel, it's not just in business, in personal life too, is, you know, you're dealing with two are the same, more so now than ever, and they've always been, but now it's more acceptable to bring it into the workforce, right? You know, you have managers and coaches, mostly managers don't want to talk about feelings and your personal life. Leave that for your therapist. But more now than ever, it's top of mind. It's reality, and it's becoming, I think, hopefully a little bit more acceptable to say, listen, I'm struggling.
Yeah.
You know, I'm unemployed. I'm about to lose my job. I'm not hitting my targets. You know, my clients I call are having problems. So this sense of that you're alone and you need to go at it alone is always been wrong. But, you know, it's when you have senior leaders making it feel that way, that you can't ask for help or you shouldn't ask for help, or you're raised that way. And I don't want to get too much into the personal side, but it's true, you know, where it's all on me. I think it makes it much more difficult in the business world. So I think what we're doing here, what LinkedIn and Zoom and the pandemic, there's always that silver lining, is it's brought people together so they don't feel alone and they collaborate. And you can do this with your clients, with your prospects, with your customers. Like Daniel said, get those advocates in there, get the champions, help, let them help you help them and figure it out together, like we're doing right now on this podcast.
Yeah, and do that. That should have been done yesterday. That alone, and be able to create that collaborative effort of trying to solve a problem. Because you don't have all the answers. I mean, you could be Danny and hit the wall at 18 miles, but many of us hit the wall at, well, walking out the door.
Oh, what?
That's give us a question there, Jerome. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, Marcus.
Yeah, what I've done with a customer is to create a sort of virtual customer advisory board and have sessions with their group of customers, because they all have their own issues. So discuss this more vulnerable points, like Ken just mentioned, also with a customer of your customers, because we're all in this and everyone is going through this. And it's a very human thing to have concerns, obviously. So I think this is a very different style of management and even more coaching, as Ken already mentioned, which is great, which is enrichment of the business, of the sales community.
Yeah, and just to elaborate that more, right, this concept of collaborating with your customer advisory board or your customers, you can also do that also other industry leaders, right? So I guarantee, regardless whichever industry you are in, right, it does not matter how much impact that the pandemic has had on it, there is some company out there who's absolutely thriving in the same industry, right? So are you reaching out? Are you benchmarking? Are you talking best practices? Are you getting some ideas to get the gears turning specifically for your industry that maybe was heavily impacted, that you can apply some of those same things to get better results, right? And it's really just becoming more aware. You don't have to have all the ideas. That's okay. There are people, whether it's your customers, people in the industry, that can help you bridge the gap of what you need to do next to grow your business and to thrive.
And Marcus, I think, and to piggyback off of you, because for that to happen, you have to put it in your awareness. You have to say, no, I've got to look for that. You know, like the whole reticular activating system in the back of our head, we got to open up our avenues to find that. And I think we have to do it alone. So once you open that up, it's amazing how many people and places you'll find that'll do that for you.
Unfortunately, within industry and on being one that's been in it for a long time, I had that same mindset. And it's only recent, relatively recent, that through this type of a form, this collaboration, this conversation, this willingness to, you know, put my pride, you know, sit on it, get in the back seat, whatever, and ask for help is really difficult for people in industry. But good, bad, ugly, I don't care. The virus has brought us to the point of saying, no, you need to do that. Because if you don't do that, you're not going to get solutions that you need to be successful in the future or whatever, keeping your doors open.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one. Go ahead, Alex.
Just a point as well, and it kind of pivots off everything that Marcus has just raised there, is that I think it's also a phenomenal opportunity to invest time on what thought leadership within industry actually looks like, and trying to be the company that walks into those shoes, because consumers and customers are looking to companies to see how they react. And I know a lot of the companies that, you know, I'm engaged with, there's a lot of attention to say, you know, who's stepping forward, who's making a difference, who's bringing a solution to the table which really helps solve a problem for me and everything else that's going on. And there's a few companies that are have really come into their own and thrown themselves into the spotlight because they've seen this opportunity, they've responded, and they've put out solutions which are really have a give first mindset. I haven't got something as eloquent as Ken to surmise that, but ultimately they found a way to kind of carve out this path of thought leadership by actually just delivering value and solving some problems for people during a time where the spotlight is really on everyone, but only very few will step forward into it in a favorable way.
Unlike Ken, Alex, you've got that great British accent, so it doesn't really matter. You're immune.
You don't need any. You don't need any quips or one-liners.
Yeah, Ken works real hard at this.
Right.
That's awesome. Yeah. I have something, also question, but what I've seen is that companies, because the whole world is changing, companies start to rebuild their relationship again with customers and even get better groups with multiple different types of decision makers at the customer side. So now, when everyone is behind their phone, behind their screen, it's easier to also connect in a broader area within your customer company, within your customer, and try to sell it maybe again. Maybe you should ask them if they're still able to pay it, the service you provide them. Maybe you can come up with ideas to support them and delay their payments and enlarge your agreement with them, enlarge your contract with them, or improve your relationship. Because if you're not doing that, maybe someone else will do that.
Right here on this particular Zoom, somebody, I mean, you guys are, just by virtue of the creativity and the, go ahead. Okay. It just, because there's a level of energy and the ability to pivot and to, there's an energy. And to your point, I got to flip it back over, the character, the passion, the drive, the hunger. When you find those individuals, they're going to continue to figure out a solution.
Yeah, and the key is, you know, and Jerome makes a great point, right? It's a huge opportunity. But what's also really important to understand, too, is because right now everyone's in front of their screens, their phones, their laptops, et cetera, there's way more noise as well. Meaning, if you are slow to market with this type of stuff, your competition's already going to be doing it. So if you take too long to adapt to the current circumstances, you will die. Your company will die. Right? It's a matter of time, right? It's a matter of when it's going to happen. It's not if, it's when. So that speed of market, then, but on top of that, when you cut into that noise, you got to be of massively high value to your customer. You can't just call them, hey, how's it going? They don't want to talk to you right now because they're also stressed too. So you have to be of high value when you are reaching out, no matter what. It can't be, hey, I want to do a survey with you. What type of value are you going to bring to them when you are reaching out so you can cut through that noise, be worth their time? And just offering webinars is not enough because right now there are so many webinars. There's so many on because that's what everyone's doing. So you need to cut through the time and earn the opportunity to engage with your prospect or customer.
Well, 100%. Geez, Marcus, you just sort of took the wind out of everybody's sail.
I'm passionate.
Who's going to follow? Who's going to follow Marcus? Not me. I'm not going to follow Marcus. I'm going to follow Marcus.
Yeah.
Danny, go ahead. You says, step up.
I think in this market, it's about differentiating on the details. You know, how do you differentiate one salesperson from another? Right. People are throwing down like email campaigns. Here's my funnel, here's my online course. But I think, especially in this time, you need to be like extremely granular with how you engage with people and be extremely personalized. I get so many requests on LinkedIn to connect that don't even have a personalized message. And I respond to them, what compelled you to reach out to me? It's nothing but crickets. But, you know, for someone like, you know, with like Marcus and Steven, they sent me a personal video in response to my connection. And that small differentiation on that detail was huge. And I started like learning like more about Marcus's process. And he's like relentless, man. You got great content coming every day. But that's
in a black V-neck shirt. He's got relentless content and a black penis.
No hair. It's super efficient. I don't need what to wear. Right?
But your wife loves
I don't run 18 miles a day. By the way, he did film a video back. He's like a trail run. Danny did. I'm like, whoa. Wow.
But Danny's not sharing something with you. It took him what? How long did it take you to allow me to be a part of your network?
I think he reached out to me about a month or so ago.
Yeah.
And I just had a bunch of other things and I finally, okay, I think I'm ready. Let's connect.
It's called virus.
Look at this. Qualifying Scott. He's qualifying Scott.
I think, you know, getting granular and getting personal, you know, is definitely, it can't hurt, right? So it's a great approach now. I mean, LinkedIn's a whole nother process. You know, if you're selling on LinkedIn, I don't sell on LinkedIn per se. I don't have a product or service that I'm reaching out to prospective buyers. But if you are, I can't imagine not doing, videos and voice messages and put this so much content on me. I mean, if you go to my freaking page, read a few posts, you should know my persona pretty well and know what's going to trigger me to say, all right, this guy gets me. Mm-hmm. And it takes, 3 to 5 minutes max. So within 3 minutes, you can nail that down. It just makes me much more, puts my guard down and makes me like, all right, this guy seems pretty cool. I'll entertain it. But when you're calling into clients or prospects via email outside of LinkedIn, you could do the same thing. They're not. Sales reps want, I feel they want instant gratification and they don't want to take the time to do the work because they're looking for the big win. I call it instification, right? It's instant gratification. And I think comes from the managers again. It's like, let's coach to the small wins, right? The micro wins that create macro gains. Write that one down, Scott.
I'm having a hard time. Fortunately, we're recording this, so I can go back and then start. Okay, he said macro wins, micro wins, whatever it is.
But I think I think the pressure from salespeople is I got to sell, I got to be hardcore. And when you think that way, it's hard to come from the heart.
But here's the funny thing. When you come, businesses culturally do that. Like you gotta show that you're hitting your targets. So there's a cultural, and anyway, go ahead, finish it up. But I want
to say when you come to it from that mindset, the heart does. There's no room for the heart to come in, and the awareness that Anita was talking about, and kind of say, let me slow down a little bit. Let me back it up a little bit. Let me go to Danny's profile. Let me research his posts. Let me see some of the activities he does. Let me get to know this person a little bit and then craft a message, an email that, like Josh Braun, everyone knows Josh Braun. He does a great job on, he calls it making deposits, right? He does a great job on giving value, but the first part of any email is about you, about your company. So there's no I's in it. It's we's. Hard to do that when the pressure's coming up from the top. For anyone, even for me. I mean, and I'm pretty aware and mindful because I speak this crap. But if I'm stressed and forget about overwhelmed, you think I'm looking at your LinkedIn page, Danny? I'm nervous as shit typing out crap.
Yeah, but you bring up a good point now, especially pre-virus. Hit your target. How come you're not selling? This is what we do. This is how we do it. Now, post-virus, now we're all talking about getting to know the customer more and being able to provide some solutions and nurturing and all of the stuff that makes sense from the heart. There's going to have to be an understanding from in the organization that some of these sales cycles are just going to take a little longer just because we're all in this sort of
struggling mode of just getting from the heart and all this stuff. And it's going to be hard for people to say, hey, where's your target? What? And that's what brings about that behavior of saying, I'm looking for the big win. I got to get the big win because the pressure's on me and all that stuff. That's going to have to change, or at least for now.
Well, your price point goes up, right? The more value you give, the more you charge. Restaurants are going to be doing it. All these companies where they don't have 30% capacity, think of it that way as a sales cycle.
Yeah.
You can use the same, you know, analogy or metaphor, is that you have 30% capacity. You're not, you ideally, if you still charge, you know, $100 per couple, you're not going to make as much. So now you got to add more value. You know, you got to figure out how to do that, and there's ways. And now it's, you know, now it's $140-150 per couple. So same with, I think, Scott, you made a good point about this. You know, if we slow down the sales cycle slightly, it's going to cost us, but how much more value, how much, and it really comes down to when you're selling is, you know, I use acknowledge and validate. Does the person hear me, and do they understand me? And without saying I understand you, right? So that's all anyone wants to know is, do you hear me and do you understand me? And if you can do that really well, you will make more money, you can charge more money, and you don't have to be an expert even at what you do. They'll want to give you their money. That's a whole nother topic, but that's the process, especially in digital marketing. I mean, if you're doing funneling, like, you know, Marcus does a lot of digital stuff and training, people want to give Marcus his money because they feel he hears them and understands them. And that's why the ideal client profile is crucial to start with.
Yeah, I think these are all great points, but, you know, one thing I think is important is sometimes companies do come back and say, well, ultimately, how do I scale personalization, right? Because we're talking about personalizing a lot and delivering value, but how do you then do that at scale? So I do think for organizations, it's important to segment the different kind of target markets and target profiles that you're gonna go for. And often maybe have your kind of tier one, tier two, which are going to be almost your gold dust, but also a tier that maybe you are going to be a little bit more experimental with, because it is difficult to take that approach, you know, with thousands and thousands and thousands of clients. So I think that there is a balance to be able, you know, for companies to strike and actually, you know, try and look at taking that tailored approach for your tier ones and your tier twos, but, you know, also having a bucket where you maybe do leverage market automation tools, for example, where you get to experiment and still play at scale, but test out a new segment. You've got to have a really clear, defined target market.
Yeah.
Scott, I think a layer to continue to add on that, because Alex, what you're talking about is segmenting it down into actionable, like we can wrap our head around focusing on this target or that target, on making these tweaks to tier one or tier two. I think the layer that maybe we're all saying here is that if organizations as a whole can put their pride, their focus on their activity and not their results, we don't want to be demo dummies. We don't want to be picking up the phone for no reason, but all of this ad value is actually just predicated upon, we still have to do the work of actually reaching out to people. We can't spend 20, 30 minutes just figuring out how we can have this best conversation and not pick up the phone. Because I think that's the flip side, is so many organizations are hearing this message of personalize, 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 and then their reps are spending more and more and more and more time trying to do that and getting away from the basics.
Okay, it seems like we're running out of time right now. We've got Alex and Marcus and everybody else, and we've been on it. Let's just check the old...
Just realized that too.
Let's see. 45 minutes. That went by in a blistering jet second. That was fantastic. Anita, you've got to join us sooner.
I will.
Yeah,
thank
you better.
You for having me.
If you guys say yes, we're going to have more of these. I'm going to do whatever is necessary to get this stuff out, because you guys are just dropping some great value. I really appreciate it. And I know the listeners of Industrial Talk and just industry as a whole can appreciate it, because we're all just sort of trying to make it through, you know? And Danny was just sort of a latecomer, dropping the 18-mile bomb, and then of course Ken was just meshing words together, and I'm so inspired. Anyway, you guys, hey, thank you very much for joining. You listeners in the Industrial Talk podcast, You stay tuned. We're going to wrap it up on the other side, and we're going to make sure that you know how to get a hold of all of these incredible sales professionals. So stay tuned, and thank you again, guys, for being on the Industrial Talk Podcast.
Had a blast.
Yeah. Pleasure. Great. Cheers. Great meeting some of you.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Look, those individuals are at the top of their game on LinkedIn. In industry, I believe we have to do a better job at our digital platforms. And the reason I say that is because I think pre-virus, of course, we were somewhat lazy and honestly, we were doing just fine. I think the post-virus, we're going to have to leverage these channels of communication more effectively, and there are strategies. You got to reach out to all of those professionals. You will not be disappointed. Follow them. See what they say. You will only, and I mean you will only benefit from your connection with these individuals. Go out to industrialtalk.com. Find their link. It's all out there. They're an open book. They're spectacular. Okay, we're going to continue with this trend. I'm passionate. I'm passionate about you and your success, and that means bringing in revenue. That means increasing profit, right? And that means you're already starting to optimize, cutting costs. What do we do now? How do you get that business up and running? I'm telling you right now, we're going to have far more information that is right around the sales and marketing, as well as technology, everything that you need to get this business up and running. We're going to do it. One and done is not the case. We need multiple. So thank you very much again for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. Be bold, be brave, dare greatly. You are changing the world, and we need you now more than ever. Thank you very much. Take care.